actions and reactions, great shock waves that affected all who could hear. The destruction of Corinna screamed through the force, building power as it reflected off other sensitive minds. It rose to a tumult that struck and woke. Sensory perceptions rushed back to Luke Skywalker like a storm, freeing him from the smothering nothingness that had trapped and frozen him. His final shout still echoed in his ears, but now he felt strangely numb. The last thing he remembered was the serpent-shaped tendrils of black force wrapping around him. Rising from the summons of Exar Kun and Luke's misguided student Kip Duron, the serpents of Sith power had sunk their fangs into him. Luke had been unable to resist their combined might. He had tried to use his lightsaber, but even that had failed. Luke had fallen into a bottomless pit deeper than any of the black holes in the Maw Cluster. He did not know how long he had been powerless. He remembered only an emptiness, a coldness, until something had jarred him loose. Now, as the sudden clamor of sensory impressions filled him, it took him some time to sort out and make sense of what he could see. The walls of the grand audience chamber, the lozenge-shaped stones, the translucent tiles set out in hypnotic patterns, the long promenade and the empty benches spread like frozen waves on the floor. Where once the entire Rebel Alliance had celebrated their victory over the first Death Star. Luke's head buzzed, and he felt giddy. He wondered why he should feel so insubstantial until he looked down and saw his own body still lying prone and motionless below him, eyes closed, face expressionless. Astonishment and disbelief blurred Luke's vision, but he forced himself to focus again on his own features. He saw the faded scars from when the Wampa ice creature had attacked him on Hoth. His body was still draped with the brown Jedi robe, his hands crossed lightly on his chest. The lightsaber lay at his hip, a cylinder of silent plasteel, crystals, and electronic components. "What's going on?" Luke said out loud. "Hello?" He heard the words thrum through his head like vibrating transmissions, but they made no sound at all in the air. Finally, Luke looked at himself, the part of himself that was aware, and saw an insubstantial image, like a ghost reflection of his body, as if he had reconstructed a hologram using his impression of what he looked like. His spectral arms and legs appeared to be garbed in a flowing Jedi robe, but the colors were washed out and weak. Everything was sketched with a lambent blue glow that sparkled as he moved. With a rush of awe and astonishment, Luke suddenly knew what had happened. Several times he had encountered wavering spirits of Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda, and his own father, Anakin Skywalker. Was he dead then? It sounded ludicrous because he didn't feel dead, but he had no point of comparison. He recalled how Obi-Wan's and Yoda's and Anakin's bodies had all vanished upon their death. Obi-Wan and Yoda leaving only crumpled robes, Anakin Skywalker leaving only the empty body armor of Darth Vader. Why then had his own body remained intact, stretched out on the raised platform? Could it be because he was not yet entirely a Jedi Master, completely given over to the Force? Or could it be that he was not truly dead? Luke heard a whirring as the turbo lift rose to the top chamber. The sound seemed eerie and unnatural, as if he were using senses other than his ears to hear. The turbo lift doors slid open. R2-D2 extended his front wheeled foot and rolled out, moving slowly, almost respectfully, along the polished stone promenade. The droid proceeded toward the raised platform. Luke's shimmering image stood in front of his body where it lay in state, and he watched with joy as the little astromech droid came to him. "R2, am I glad to see you," he said. He expected the droid to bleep with wild excitement, but R2 gave no indication that he heard or detected Luke. "R2?" R2-D2 trundled up the ramp to Luke's shrouded body. The droid hooted, a low, mournful sound that expressed deep grief, if droids could feel such emotions. It tore Luke apart to see his mechanical friend looking at the body. His optical receptor winked from red to blue and back again. Luke realized that the droid was taking readings, checking on his body's condition. He wondered if R2 would detect anything different now that Luke's spirit had been set free. But the droid gave no sign. Luke attempted to move over to R2 to touch the polished, barrel-shaped body. It took him a moment to figure out how to move his ghostly legs. His image skimmed across the floor with a dizzying fluidity, but when he stroked R2, his hand passed directly through. He felt no contact with the plasteel of the droid's body, no sensation of the floor against his ethereal feet. Luke tried walking completely through the droid, hoping somehow to scramble R2's sensors, but R2 continued to take readings unperturbed. The droid gave another sad hoot as if in farewell, then spun around and whirred slowly back toward the turbolift. Luke called out, "Wait, R2! But he held little hope the droid would hear. A quick idea came to him. Rather than using his illusory hands, he reached out with the Force. He thought of how he and Ganteris had used little nudges from the Force to rattle metal antennas in the airborne ruins of Tibonopolis on Bespin. Luke reached out invisibly to tap R2's shell, hoping to make a loud spang that would at least let the droid know something was amiss. He pushed and thumped with all his intangible might and succeeded only in what he thought was a barely audible bump against the droid's metal casing. R2 paused, but while Luke gathered strength to make another Force assault, the droid dismissed the unexplained sound and entered the turbolift. Inside the turbolift, R2 turned his optical sensor once more toward the body of his master, made a low sliding whistle, and then the doors whisked closed. Luke heard the humming of the platform as it dropped back down to the lower levels of the great temple. Luke stood in the echoing grand audience chamber all alone, awake again, but insubstantial and apparently powerless. He would have to find some other way to solve his predicament. He looked out through the temple skylights into the blackness of the jungle moon's deep night, and he wondered what he could do to save himself. 4. With a Wookiee bellow of impatience, Chewbacca urged the last members of the Special Forces team onto the remaining troop transport. The other transports had been shuttling up and down from Coruscant orbit all day, carrying weapons, equipment, and personnel to the strike force already assembled in space. The heavily armed battle group consisted of one escort frigate and 4 Corellian corvettes. Enough firepower to occupy the secret Imperial think tank, Maw installation, and to overcome any resistance from the weapons scientists stranded there. The last 3 stragglers hustled up the ramp, clad in light armor and securing tight packs onto their shoulders. Chewbacca watched the soldiers strap into their seats before he punched the all-clear button to raise the boarding ramp. "Your impatience is not helping, Chewbacca," C-3PO said. "The tension level is already substantial, and you're simply making things worse. I have a bad feeling about this mission already." Chewbacca growled at him, disregarding his comment. Impatient, he picked up the droid and dropped him with a metallic clatter into the only remaining spare seat, which was, unfortunately, next to Chewbacca's own. "Indeed," 3PO said, as he dutifully hooked himself in. "I'm doing my best. This isn't my area of expertise, you know." Chewbacca settled into a seat that had never been designed to accommodate a creature of his massive proportions. He bent his hairy knees nearly to chest level. He wished he could be with Han in the Millennium Falcon, but Han and Leia had gone to see Luke Skywalker, and Chewbacca felt his stronger duty was to go rescue the Wookiee prisoners left inside Maw installation. The rest of the assault team shifted in their seats, looking around, double-checking their mental lists of equipment and procedures. Page's commandos, a crack assault troop, would be handling most of the frontline mission, with plenty of New Republic firepower to back them up. The Special Operations Commander, General Crix Madeen, had given the Special Forces thorough briefings on strategy for the planned occupation. The soldiers were fully trained and competent. Chewbacca just wished the pilot would hurry up and take off. He blew out a long sigh through his rubbery lips, thinking uneasily of Han. He had waited a long time for an opportunity to rescue the tortured Wookiee slaves, though. When he, Han, and young Kip Duran had been captured by Admiral Dalla at Maw installation, Chewbacca had been forced to work with captive Wookiees aboard the Star Destroyers and down in the installation itself. The Wookiees had been imprisoned for more than 10 years, working at hard labor, and the resistance had gone out of them. The thought of their ruined lives made Chewbacca's blood boil. Not long ago, with 3PO's dubious abilities as translator, Chewbacca had addressed the New Republic Council. He urged them to occupy the installation and rescue the Wookiee prisoners, as well as to keep the new weapon designs from falling into Imperial hands. Seeing Mon Mothma's support, the Council had agreed. With a mechanical whirr and a thump of metal against metal, the landing struts of the transport drew up inside the hull. With a lurch, the transport rose on its repulsor lift, then headed off the landing platform, rising into the sky as the metropolis of Imperial City glittered below. 3PO began talking to himself. Chewbacca marveled at how sophisticated the droid's electronic brain must be to consistently find so many things to complain about. "I simply don't understand why Mistress Leia ordered me to go with you. I am always happy to serve in any capacity, naturally, but I could have assisted greatly in watching the children while she visited Master Luke on Yavin 4. I've been doing a good job of taking care of the twins, haven't I?" Chewbacca grunted. 3PO continued. "True, we misplaced them at the holographic zoo for extinct animals, but that was only one time, and it all turned out right in the end." He swiveled his golden head. As the acceleration increased, Chewbacca closed his eyes and growled at him to be quiet. 3PO ignored him. "It would have been nice to see R2-D2 again at Master Luke's Jedi Academy. I haven't spoken to my counterpart in a long time." 3PO did not slow down as he changed subjects. "I really don't know what use I'm expected to be on this military mission. I've never been very skilled at combat. I don't like combat. I don't like excitement in any form, though I seem to have encountered enough of it." Inertia pushed Chewbacca back against his uncomfortably small seat as the transport accelerated toward the congregation of battleships in orbit around Coruscant. 3PO continued and continued. "Of course, I understand that I am technically supposed to help sift through the data in the Maw installation computers, and I suppose I could be of some use translating the languages of alien scientists, but certainly there must be some other droid better qualified for that type of work. Isn't General Antilles taking along an entire team of Slicer droids to get encrypted information? Page's commandos are experts in this sort of thing. Why do I have to go along and do all the hard work? It seems unfair to me." Chewbacca barked a sharp command. 3PO turned to him with his yellow optical sensors glowing in indignation. "I will not be quiet, Chewbacca. Why should I listen to you after you put my head on backward in Cloud City? If you yourself had spoken up during the preparations for putting this team together, you could have convinced them to let me stay with Mistress Leia. But you thought I might be an asset to this mission, and now you're just going to have to listen to me." With a sigh of annoyance, Chewbacca reached over and hit the power switch on the back of 3PO's neck. The droid fell silent, his words slurring to a stop as he slumped forward. On the troop transport, Page's commandos, noted for their intense training, cold efficiency, and utter professionalism, took a moment to applaud Chewbacca's action. On the command bridge of the escort frigate Yavaris, General Wedge Antilles looked across space. Sunlight reflected off the metal hulls of his fleet. He had asked for command of this mission because he wanted to return to where Kwai-Zook had spent so much of her life, to where the secrets of her lost memory might lie hidden. The Yavaris was a powerful ship, despite its fragile appearance caused by the thin spine that separated its two primary components. At the frigate's aft end, a boxy construction contained sublight and hyperdrive engines and the power reactors that drove not only the engines, but also 12 turbolaser batteries and 12 laser cannons. On the other end of the connecting rod, separated from the engines, was the much larger command section, hanging down in an angular structure that contained the command bridge, crew quarters, scanners, and cargo bays that carried two full X-Wing fighter squadrons for the assault. The escort frigate held a crew of about 900 seasoned soldiers, while the rest of his fleet, four Corellian corvettes, carried 100 on each vessel. Wedge brushed his dark hair away from his forehead and set his square jaw. The last of the troop transports had docked on the frigate, bringing the remainder of the hand-picked raiders. Han Solo had reported that Maw installation was no longer protected by Admiral Dalla's Star Destroyers, which had been lured out of the black hole cluster to wreak havoc across the galaxy. The precious weapons information and scientists inside the installation were undefended. Probably. Wedge was prepared for surprises, especially from a congregation of Imperial weapons designers. On the command bridge of the Yavaris, Wedge toggled on the intercom. "Prepare to depart," he said. The four corvettes folded around the escort frigate in a diamond formation. Ahead, Wedge saw throbbing blue-white light as banks of heavy engines pulsed to life. The corvette's huge engines were twice as large as the living compartments and the hammerhead-shaped control section. Princess Leia had been riding a Corvette when Vader's Star Destroyer had captured her, demanding that she return the stolen Death Star plans so long ago. He watched the light-embroidered night side of Tarruskan veer away from the fleet as they angled up out of orbit, past metallic docking stations and heavy parabolic mirrors that directed magnified sunlight to warm the higher frozen latitudes. He wished Kwai had stayed with him to watch the departure, but she was down in their quarters reviewing information tapes, studying. Since her memory would not come back of its own accord, Kwai intended to fill the gaps with the missing information as quickly as possible. She also had a deep revulsion toward watching a planet from orbit. It had taken Wedge much quiet encouraging before she finally told him that the sight reminded her of her youth, when she had been held hostage aboard an orbital training sphere under the harsh tutelage of Moff Tarkin. Kwai had been forced to watch as Victory-class Star Destroyers obliterated the honeycomb settlements of her people whenever students failed their examinations. Thinking of the terrible things the Empire had done to the delicate and lovely Kwai made Wedge clench his teeth. He turned to the bridge crew. Ready for hyperspace? Course set, sir, the navigation officer answered. Wedge vowed to do what he could to fill Kwai's life with joy once they had conquered Maw installation. Move out, he said. Inside windowless quarters in the protected lower decks of the Yavaris, Kwai Zook stared into the tutorial screen and blinked her indigo eyes. She skimmed file after file, absorbing the information as enthusiastically as a Tatooine desert sponge grabbed droplets of moisture. A small portrait hollow of Wedge sat inside a cube atop her work table. She glanced at it frequently, reminding herself what he looked like, who he was, how much he meant to her. None of her memories were certain after Kip Duron's assault on her mind. She had initially forgotten Wedge himself, forgotten the times they had spent together. He had desperately told her everything, showed her pictures, taken her out to the same places that the two of them had visited on the planet Ithor. He had reminded her of the reconstruction site of the Cathedral of Winds they had visited on Vortex. Some of these things caused elusive images to flicker in the back of her mind, enough that she knew they had been there once, but she could not grasp them anymore. Other things Wedge told her exploded back into her thoughts with full clarity, enough to bring stinging tears. Whenever that happened, Wedge was there to hold her in his arms and comfort her.